We're going to get to the unbelievable interview in just a moment. But first, did you know that I was a 1099 entrepreneur at age 10? That's right. When all the highly paid executives, editors, and journalists did their job, they handed the finished newspaper off to me as a 10-year-old independent contractor that could either deliver 200 newspapers to 200 homes or to two dumpsters.
I chose the 200 homes.
Since then, I've been supporting, promoting, and engaging with entrepreneurs of all ages and walks of life. One of the beautiful aspects of entrepreneurism is they're often rooted with solving a problem. It's the intuition that makes your life better. Entrepreneurs, innovators exude emotion, just like the entrepreneurs at mystore.com. Folks, check it out. Use the promo code Otis. Go to mystore.com. All season slippers as low as $25. Coconut teeth whitener, $15 with the promo code Otis. Blue Foods protein bites, they're vegan, $10.99 with the promo code Otis. All kinds of instant savings with the promo code Otis. That is my son's name, and all the proceeds go to my son's future endeavors, and maybe one day he'll have his own promo code. I wonder if he'll use Dad. Luckily, that is his choice, not mine. I chose the promo code Otis. Go to mystore.com. Go to mypillow.com. Use the 800 number, 800-598-4268. That's 800-598-4268. And don't forget to use the promo code Otis. Let's go to the Zoom line where we've got Kunal Patel with us with the Dallas Federal Reserve. I forget which chapter, which district it is. Is it the 11th district, 7th district? Which district, Kunal?
We're with the 11th district.
All right. Thank you very much for joining us. How are you doing today, by the way?
I'm doing great, Jason. How are you doing today?
You know, not too bad. I'm up here in the Dakotas, and we're starting to get our spring thaw coming in. We just got socked with 2 feet of snow like last week, and then 2 days later, it's 50 degrees. So we might have another flood season on our hands. Who knows? You're down in Dallas. What is 75 degrees today? Everything's fine? People in shorts? What?
Good guess on the 75. I think that we had a little bit of cold weather earlier, a couple days ago.
Oh, that's right. You guys got hit, too, with a little bit of 40-degree weather.
Exactly. The funny thing is I don't even know if it got to 40. It might have been a little bit closer to the 50s. It was definitely a surprise for April.
You know, not to editorialize here because that's not why you're brought in, but isn't it funny on social media to see the different geographies and how they react to weather?
Oh, without a doubt. I think I've had a friend growing up that would wear like shorts when it was like 30 degrees outside in Dallas. And he's from Canada, so it was kind of like, you know, it's much more colder in Canada than it is here. It's okay to wear shorts outside even when it's 30 degrees.
I can just remember like 10 years ago when social media first started coming more national, if you will, and when Dallas would get an inch of snow, you guys would shut the freeways down and everything. Of course, up in North Dakota, we laugh. We're like, an inch of snow, great. Yeah, okay, walk to school today. And so it's a whole different, you know, geographical ball game when we look at these different things. But that's the way it is. You know, my son, you mentioned the shorts. You know, my son, he's a teenager. He just turned 17 last week. And he still wears shorts every day. We actually had to have a family meeting in case the car stalled and he's in shorts, that at least he's got to bring with a pair of sweatpants. Because I get it that, you know, you get in the car, it's warm, you walk outside for 2 seconds, you're inside the building. But, you know, if we get stuck in a snowbank and you're in shorts and it's minus 30 degree weather, we're going to go to jail. We don't care about your legs. We're more concerned about going to jail, son. So we had to have those conversations with him. Anywho,
always a good idea. I during the winter time, I generally keep a jacket. The summertime, you know, don't need anything. Hopefully, it doesn't get too hot in Texas. But always good to keep at least one jacket in the car. You never know when you need it.
Speaking of hot in Texas, most of the oil and gas activity seems to be coming out of Texas. At least the oil activity. I know Pennsylvania is very big in the gas activity, but. When we're taking a look at the Permian Basin and Eagle Ford, the Haynesville, I'm not sure if the Wolfcamp came up in the survey or not, but
Let's go ahead and take a look at the recent survey that came out. March 29th is available at the DallasFed.org if you'd like to go ahead and take a look at this survey. But what's kind of the quick takeaway for those, if you're an oil exec or you're an investor, what's the takeaway for those people?
So the main takeaway, and let me take a step back just in case, like I think there's quite a few that are familiar with the survey, but it is, you know, in this latest survey, we did survey 147 upstream oil and gas firms. The data was collected from March 15th to the 23rd. 95 were exploration and production firms. 52 were oil and gas support services firms, generally known as oil field services firms. And we have these indexes that kind of give you an idea whether there's an expansion or a contraction over the prior quarter. It gives an idea of direction. And the main takeaways is that many of you noticed that there's been an expansion over the past like 2+ years. And the latest activity index is suggesting that the expansion essentially is, I mean, it was kind of like stalled out. The index came in close to zero. So it's kind of indicating the activity was just largely unchanged from the prior quarter. The other key takeaways, many of you know this, you know, costs, they could just continue to increase. We did see a little bit of easing in the supply chain for this current quarter. Employment growth, that continues, but it does suggest maybe it's a little bit slower than in prior quarters, but that wage inflation continues to remain. If I was to leave off another big takeaway, just the executives have started to, you know, their outlook, it turned negative. Again, this is a quarter over quarter. So compared to where they were last quarter, they're a little bit more pessimistic. And then when it comes to uncertainty, they're significantly more uncertain. I think what we saw in this latest quarter was, of course, you know, a softening in commodity prices, both oil and natural gas. And then, of course, in our comment section, if the executives allow us to publish their comments, they're anonymous, but they can give you an idea of the reasons for them to be uncertain, whether it's cost inflation, whether it's continuing to be labor and material shortages, or it just could be price volatility. And, of course, there's a lot on the regulatory environment. So a lot of takeaways. I try to shorten it down as much as I could, but I think those are the main takeaways from our latest survey.
You know, one of the memories that was going through my head when you were talking was, you know, we started the conversation with Dallas, and I've been to Dallas a few times, and I've been to a few skyscrapers down there. A lot of oil and gas companies have skyscrapers in Dallas, and that's where their corporate offices are, Houston, Dallas, etc. Denver, I guess, would be another place. But in Dallas, I specifically remember one company, and I'm not going to mention their name because that I don't want to take away from the story, but there was four, they got to at least be making six figures if you're, you know, if you're a C-suite executive. So I figure there's close to $1 million worth of salaries in this room. And I'm trying to explain to them that, you know, the oil and gas industry really is going down the path of cigarettes and coal and just being targeted in a very public anti, you know, PR way. And I basically got escorted out of the office with security. I mean, boy, they didn't want to hear that, nothing to do with it. And now that, you know, a week later, a Wall Street Journal had a headline that said oil and gas is the new cigarettes or something like that. And I thought, yeah, someone else says it, they hear it. I'm hearing more and more people really start to, this sentiment's picking up more and more that they're right, really getting concerned now that this might become a reality where the image of oil and gas is not as popular as they once thought. Did that come up in your survey at all? The industry image impacting any part of the industry? Because I'm hearing it up here in the Bakken.
So we did not ask like a specific like question around this. Obviously the topic has come up from time to time, and we do have these anonymous executive comments, and they do kind of reference you know, the sentiment that the industry has from, let's say, whether it's the public or the government or from financial providers. Some of it could be just it could be something related to, as you know, ESG, but sometimes it could just be just a view about fossil fuels in general. But we actually did not ask any like specific questions, so it kind of falls outside like the study. In many times is purely about, you know, what's the activity in oil and gas, you know, what's the employment, what's happening to costs. But the sentiment can make a difference, right? Sentiment can impact, as you know, financing. It can impact valuations. But the comments do kind of touch on some of this maybe, but they don't, I guess, call it out as much as you kind of mentioned it.
You know, the ESG part of it and some of those investment parts, that I definitely can see. But even part of some of the workforce actually is where I was more or less coming from with the question, because it seems a lot of the younger generation just isn't really coming into the industry. And in North Dakota, anyways, they're already talking about looking overseas to like the Ukraine or Poland or some other places to bring in some workers. And so how about from like the workforce side of things? Did that sentiment come up in there at all?
So the most one that we could kind of correlate to one of the questions we did ask, it's a one-off question. It was, which of the following is the primary factor causing worker shortages in the oil field? And we asked this question because pretty much for the last 2 years, every energy survey in the comment section, there's at least two or three comments around challenges, you know, securing labor, turnover, wage inflation, and so on and so forth. So we did get 128 responses. Again, they were asked to pick the primary factor. The first most picked choice was cyclical nature of the industry. You know, that kind of covers the price volatility that we've seen over the past, let's say, 15 years. But the second most picked one, which was picked by 27%, was a perception of limited career potential due to the energy transition. We kind of debated what would be the right choice to kind of capture this. Could it just be like you mentioned? Is it just the sentiment about the industry itself? We thought, though, since it was a job-related question, we'd ask about limited career potential. Again, 27%. Our other choices, you know, lack of work-life balance and flexible work schedule, that got less than 10%. But you hear a lot about it, where people would like to work from home for some days of the week or like to have a flexible work schedule. That's really not the jobs in the oil field, which are 60-plus hours. We have compensation in other industries. Maybe the compensation in the other industries are getting better, less than 10%. Less attractive work locations. As you know, you were mentioning Dallas and Houston and Denver, but many of these oil field jobs are not in these cities, especially if you're working for oil field services. And so I think everyone would agree that, you know, some people like to live in bigger cities. Maybe it's less attractive. Again, less than 10%. And then inability to pass drug test and or background check. That was actually the lowest. But, you know, when we looked through the comments, you know, I think there was one that kind of caught me. It was like, currently finding skilled labor is our biggest challenge. Rates of pay have risen to the point that they're diminishing our gross margins, and competitors are overpaying, sometimes paying to the point of offering raises based on the ability to steal the work from our customers. In some cases, it's close to a 30% bump in wages. So there is a lot of wage inflation. Another person wrote, many left the oil field in 2020 and are not coming back, either due to their age or the booms and busts. And so and I guess they also add, perceived energy transition concerns seem less impactful than the overall perception of oil field work. So each person has debated, you know, what is really, really driving it. Mm-hmm. But like you mentioned, I think the most picked answer was the cyclical nature of the industry. At the end of the day, like, I think people looking for a career, right? And if you have the oil price fell in 2009, 2015, 2020, and even today, there's a lot of volatility in the price of oil. I think that can also impact whether you see it as a long-term career.
It's interesting, too, because when I take a look at like the last 10, 12 years when, you know, I'm a media guy that happens to be covering oil and gas at the end of the day. So, you know, I had to learn kind of that cyclical nature and how companies react and how companies kind of go. But in the world of artificial intelligence and in the world of uncertainty, whether it's image or subsidies or Joe Biden or, you know, whoever they're going to blame this week in politics, whatever it might be, the bottom line is that this go-around of the cyclical nature is different. Now, whether it's a supply chain issue, they've handled those in the past, but that's part of it. And I don't remember the wages ever being an issue over the past 10 to 12 years. That one seems to be coming up, at least up in the Bakken and in the Rocky Mountain region. Even in the Marcellus, I'm hearing that the wages aren't as high as what a lot of the entry-level people thought. And then the other kind of bizarrity that I'm curious about is the skilled labor, too, because as we're getting into the world of automation and we're getting into the world of UAS and we're getting to the world of ESG and scope and acronyms that we've never heard of before, whether it starts with a G or an H or a Q or an LMNOP, there's all kinds of acronyms. The stock was another one I saw the other day, Stock Act. And so I think they start with the words and then they work their way backwards from there. I'm starting to realize that. But the question is this, wages, are the entry-level wages the same, I guess, that they've been, or did that come up in your survey? And then the skilled labor part, too, is that changing at all, do you see, from this latest survey?
So I think it'll be kind of hard for me to say, like, you know, they do definitely mention the increasing wages, and it continues to be a concern because the wages continue to increase at a very, very strong pace. I'm trying to think of, in our last survey, I think someone actually referenced the amount, but it was either, let's say, about 10% or higher, which is pretty strong wage inflation. And so there continues to be the strong wage inflation. When it comes to jobs, as you know, there's always been commentary that many of these jobs would go away, would be replaced by something automated. But I think the reality is that you look at the jobs, and today jobs are – total jobs are at levels not seen since 2007 in Texas. But additionally, what I should add, though, is the rig count is significantly lower. And so when it comes to these oilfield services jobs, in some ways that employment's kind of mirroring that rig count. And then when it comes to the EMP jobs, there just isn't as much of a need for as much planning and monitoring of wells, because you can use technology to remote monitor them. And then when it comes to planning, we shale development's been here since, let's say, 2008. With each year, you know, you become more and more sure of, you know, what you're going to get from that specific well. And so these companies have been able to do with less employees what they used to do. So I think that's kind of like the really skilled aspect. From the corporate perspective, there's also obviously skilled labor in the oil field itself. But I think that, like, a lot of it is just efficiency. These rigs are able to drill these wells significantly faster. They're able to complete them significantly faster. You've heard of simul-frac, which is allowing them to, I believe, my understanding, complete multiple wells at once. Pad drilling definitely helped on the drilling end. That's where you've seen that impact in terms of labor. I think to go back to your question on wages in other industries, it's kind of hard sometimes to compare them. Because in the oil field, you're going to work 60 hours a week. There may also be overtime tied. I believe there is overtime tied with those additional hours. Maybe in construction, it's less hours. And so there's a lot of different things you have to consider in terms of wages, in terms of overtime, in terms of a lifestyle. But what I think most people would agree with is that I think coming out of the pandemic, I mean, sorry, coming out of the 2008 downturn, you know, oil bounced back pretty strongly. And so there was a lot of demand for these OFO workers. Coming in today, there's a lot of demand for many other industries like construction. And so it's kind of hard to say. That's why we asked the question, you know, is it the wages that might be driving them away? They definitely did not put it as their primary, but it could be a secondary or third type of challenge.
Inflation, supply chain issues. How about with those? Have we seen the prices stop? Are they still going up? Are they going backwards? And what are people talking about with that?
So when it comes to cost inflation, they continue to see that cost inflation. So we have these indexes that kind of compare this quarter versus the last. And within OFO services, that index remains elevated and unchanged, suggesting that those input costs going into OFO services continue to increase at a similar pace. Within EMP, you know, elevated but slightly slowing in terms of those increases. So cost inflation continuing, you may see it slow compared to the really strong pace we saw in 2022. I think most would say that it will slow, but it may still be above what most would obviously want. I think from the various earnings calls that are out there from publicly listed E&P firms, you know, a 10% is kind of what's kind of thrown out there for OFO inflation this year. And then when it comes to the supply delivery time index, that was negative. So an easing of supply chain issues, essentially the time to receive your delivery from suppliers was less this quarter versus last. But That's the supplier delivery time. The index suggests it's been increasing since the fourth quarter of 2020. And it's kind of debatable, why did it decrease? Could it just be that it takes time, you know, when you put in an order to receive the equipment? It could be that. And it may be that the equipment, a lot of it came in the first quarter. It could be also that since activity didn't continue to increase, maybe that provided some relief for this supplier inputs to arrive faster than previously.
What do you think the biggest concern is for the oil and gas operator right now down in the Permian, down in the Texas area? Is it uncertainty, or is there anything specifically, I guess, that jumps out as a concern?
So we did ask this question, which was, which of the following do you believe will have the most influence on the profitability of your firm this year? The top two choices that they pick, again, they were only allowed to pick their top one, but cost inflation got 30% of responses and health of the global economy got 30%. So cost inflation, very straightforward. They've been dealing with very strong cost increases. I think there has been uncertainty, of course, on what will costs look like this year. I think last year the expected cost inflation was much smaller than what actually occurred. And so cost inflation very close to their operations, something that they are likely uncertain about. The other one is the health of the global economy. Again, that can also impact commodity prices. I think there are quite a few comments around just concern about what may happen to the global economy. This survey was right after the recent banking, the developments in the banking sector. I think that started on March 10th. And so that can also impact, that can increase your uncertainty, right? Because you become a little bit uncertain about what may happen next.
Do you guys get into ESG at all? That doesn't seem like it'd be in your wheelhouse yet. It will be once it's a little more established, but is that in the survey at all? Do you guys get into that much?
It's a great question. I mean, primarily, you know, it may come up in the commentary. As you know, ESG, though, has been here for quite some time. And so I think when ESG started, there was a lot more comments. But recently, they just haven't called it just ESG. They may just say something related to sentiment or to financing, but calling out ESG specifically doesn't happen as much. I don't believe we've ever asked a specific question around ESG. I think you kind of mentioned, you know, it's like it's still taking some time to kind of define. And so writing the right question is kind of hard to
know. Well, you're kind of in a role where you can't do anything with it yet. Like you can't go on official record with it. You can't really, because the Fed, you guys have to kind of, you got procedures and rules and protocols you got to go through before you can just start. You can't be like, you know, Kevin O'Leary chucking Molotov cocktails on Fox News. You can't do that. We all want to do that kind of stuff, but you know, that's the type of thing. In the media, we're trained on certain, you know, okay, he's a professor. He can't really do this. He can't do that. To be respectful to his, to don't back him in a corner, you know, on live radio or live television type of a thing. So that's why I phrase it the way I did that. I'm not even sure if you guys can even comment on that ESG. What do you guys have an official statement when some, like, let's say I'm cold calling you from the media and I want to know about ESG. Do you guys even do anything with that yet?
I think that when it comes to ESG, you know, it really it depends on what the specific question honestly is.
Yeah.
What happens is that, like, we just haven't asked the specific question around it. I'm not exactly sure what question we would ask to our survey participants, but they will comment from time to time about the impact of ESG on their business. I think that, like, I've read that they are working to create, like, it's called ESG scores. Companies are working to kind of integrate ESG into their various practices, but there's nothing too specific, and it just, again, depends, I think, a lot of times on the question.
And folks, if you go to thecrudelife.com, we've got past interviews with Kunal Patel, and ESG has come up in the past, but I noticed it didn't come up in this survey very much. And what made me kind of go off on this little tangent, I guess, was the last question: which of the following do you believe will have the most influence on your profitability of your firm this year? First one, as you mentioned, cost inflation, 30%. Second, health of the global economy. And then the fourth was access to and cost of capital. Last year, that would have said something to do with ESG, without a doubt. There's no question about it. So I see where that's kind of, it's changed and evolved, and people have either gone away from it or it's gotten out of their vernacular. But also supply chain issues, I'd put in cost inflation too. Boy, those are definitely related. Okay, so getting back to the survey here, what do you want people to kind of walk away from this knowing as far as if they're preparing their business, because there's so much uncertainty out there? What is certain?
I think that so there's a lot of uncertainty out in the oil field. I think a lot of times, though, they find certainty in they know what the price of oil is. They know that there's a lot of challenges ahead. I think that, like, the main thing when they read through this is they kind of can understand what executives are thinking. In regards to whether it's the uncertainty or the outlook, it's kind of hard to say, though, like, in terms of, like, takeaways, like what an executive should think. I think many people, though, within the oil and gas space have felt uncertain. I mean, I don't think that's anything that's different. I think the future of fossil fuels has always been a topic of uncertainty. You know, will be using fossil fuels in 10 years, 20 years, 50 years? But I think that, like, what we have to see is, you know, how does this evolve? I think what we do know right now is that there is quite a lot of cost inflation. At least maybe we got some relief on the supply chain end. The outlook has turned a little bit negative, but you know, sometimes it may be related to the price of oil and the price of natural gas. And of course, uncertainty is really high. And so I think we just kind of have to see throughout this year, do some of these questions around our uncertainty kind of get answered, or do they not? I think the topic that always comes up is the underinvestment in the oil and gas industry. But we have to see what impact that has. I think that that underinvestment may be related just to uncertainty at the end of the day.
Well, one thing that's certain is that North Dakota is definitely probably going to flood this year. We just got an email from Governor Burgum, who's declaring a statewide emergency for spring flooding, direct state resources to be on standby. So you might be hearing about us in the news this week, Kunal Patel from the Dallas Federal Reserve. We started the interview talking about the potential of a spring flood up here, and we're ending the interview with an email from the governor declaring a statewide emergency for spring flooding. Well, it looks like we're going to be doing some sandbagging of a different kind this year up here. So, well, sir, I appreciate the time today. And when's the next survey coming out? And what kind of information should people know about this one, where they can find it and all that good stuff? We'll have the links at the Crude Life. But what type of information do you want people to know?
Definitely. And of course, stay safe, Jason. It's always good talking with you. I think that we've talked many times in the past. Our second quarter release scheduled for Thursday, June 22nd. 9:30 a.m. As always, we'll have some new special questions we'll ask, and then of course we'll have our regular indexes, but definitely do check it out. It's on the dallasfed.org website, and you just go out to surveys and choose the energy survey, or you can find it in many other places just straight through Google. But June 22nd, 9:30 a.m. It's a Thursday. Definitely look out for it. We always appreciate the wide readership that we get, whether it's people in the industry, people in government, people in academia, and of course, reporters.
Did you know that I was a 1099 entrepreneur at age 10? That's right. When all the highly paid executives, editors, and journalists did their job, they handed the finished newspaper off to me as a 10-year-old independent contractor that could either deliver 200 newspapers to 200 homes or to two dumpsters.
I chose the 200 homes.
Since then, I've been supporting, promoting, and engaging with entrepreneurs of all ages and walks of life. One of the beautiful aspects of entrepreneurism is they're often rooted with solving a problem. It's the intuition that makes your life better. Entrepreneurs, innovators exude emotion, just like the entrepreneurs at mystore.com. Folks, check it out. Use the promo code Otis. Go to mystore.com. All season slippers as low as $25. Coconut teeth whitener, $15 with the promo code Otis. Blue Foods protein bites, they're vegan, $10.99 with the promo code Otis. All kinds of instant savings with the promo code Otis. That is my son's name, and all the proceeds go to my son's future endeavors, and maybe one day he'll have his own promo code. I wonder if he'll use Dad. Luckily, that is his choice, not mine. I chose the promo code Otis. Go to mystore.com. Go to mypillow.com. Use the 800 number, 800-598-4268. That's 800-598-4268. And don't forget to use the promo code Otis.